This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We appreciate you being with us. You can visit 971talk.com to learn more about the station. We'd love to have you there. Also, you can download the 971 app. It's the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. And when you go visit there, you can stream the station anywhere you go at any time. It's pretty cool. You can find the Annie Fry Show podcast there as well. We just had Todd Sivia in studio. We were talking about estate planning and, you know, making sure that you have everything in place in the event of your untimely or maybe timely death. How much do you think about dying? How much does it enter? Like, how much do you think about it regularly, or how much do you find yourself, it comes up to you and then you're like, no, I'm not going there?
Lately, not much. When I was younger, I thought about it more because I have cystic fibrosis and I just didn't know what my life would look like. The older I get, the more I'm realizing that, hey, I'm actually living a pretty normal life. So I think I actually think about it less now than I did then.
What is your prognosis?
What does that mean?
I mean, you have told the story on the air before that somebody who has cystic fibrosis, that you grew up thinking, what was the lifespan, like 20 years?
I think when I was born, it was 24, 25 was the life expectancy.
How old were you when that changed?
As I got older, the life expectancy went up. So I never really got to that point. But when I was in my mid-20s, I started to get pretty sick. I think I was 26, 27. I started to get pretty sick and was just, you know how when you fight a cold, you'll hot and cold and you're sweating and you just, you know,
feel you're just your sick. Body is not happy.
That was my daily existence was that. And I was getting pretty sick, and I had also gotten used to feeling low energy. I just didn't have much energy. And so I started to think, man, maybe this is starting to catch up with me now. I never really thought, I was a pretty healthy kid, but I thought maybe it was starting to catch up. And it clearly was. But I also, at that moment, it was right after I got married. So that I was like, well, I'm thankful that at least I got to get married. We didn't have kids yet. But I got into a drug study. There's actually a very good CF program here in St. Louis, which is not true of every city. It's not just like every major city has a CF program.
Like we a have, very fortunate situation for you.
Yes, because I was born here. My family's from Granite City in Caseyville. So it's not as if we chose St. Louis because I had CF. This is where I'm from. And Wash U School of Medicine has a great CF program. I think SLU might have one too, but I'm not as familiar with that one, if that's the case. And so I got into a drug study, and I've told this story before, but it's pretty miraculous. I got into a drug study that was here's how specific it was. CF is a disease that affects a very small percentage of Americans, well, of people, but especially Western European sort of background people usually. And it's a genetic disease. Of that gene, there's one gene that gets messed up and it affects all these different things. And one of the main things is that it affects your mucus in your lungs to be thicker, and it just causes more, you know, you catch everything basically. And of the small population of the world that has cystic fibrosis, only 5% of that population has the specific mutation that I have on that gene.
Wow. You're unique.
Yeah.
That drug that came out was just a prototype. It wasn't even on the market. That was just being tested for only that 5% in 2009.
That's crazy.
And then not only did you have to have the right genotype to get into the drug study, then you had to qualify to get into it because they're testing. You know, they can't just take everybody. They have to take people who are going to be good test subjects. I happen to qualify for that.
Did you just charm them?
I just walked in with my feather cap and I was like, hello.
They're like, well, take him.
he's ripe for this. And then once you're in, it's double blind. 50% of the people were on a placebo. And I knew day one they gave me that thing that I had the actual medication.
Do you feel comfortable saying what the drug is?
It's called, at the time, it was just called like PX945 or whatever. Now it's called Kalydeco.
Mm-hmm.
And they've expanded that drug to affect more and more of the CF population. It doesn't affect all of it yet, but it's close. It's getting closer to where now, I think it's called Ivacaftor or Trikafta. I can't remember which one's which, that affects most of the population of CF. But I could tell day one because I had energy. I took the pill. And I told the nurses, I'm on it. I can feel it. And they're like, don't tell us that. This is a double blind study.
Yeah.
And they said, well, it's great, though. That's very, very good, of course, for the study itself. But ever since then, I've been able to kind of get back every day. Every day.
You started taking that when?
2009. And then I never left it because I was in the drug study from day one, pretty much.
Do they still study you?
No, the study's over because the drug works.
Because it works.
Yeah. Now they've done lots of other studies because they've had to expand it to other genotypes or other
Does CF
mutations.
Still affect your mindset on your lifespan?
Yeah, it still does a little bit because I
feel like
know.
If you grew up thinking that your circumstances were different than other people, that would be kind of forged in you.
Uh huh. Yeah, and I don't even know. I've never really connected these two things in my brain, whether this is really a true connection or if I just happen to have this interest. But I think when you're told your whole life that your life may be short and you're treated that way. Like I don't want to say I was a Make-A-Wish kid because I wasn't in the program, but I got treated that way by a lot of organizations. I got to do a lot of special things because when you're a third grader with cystic fibrosis, they're like, let's treat this kid well. He may not have a whole lot of years left. And I didn't know that when I'm in third grade. But as you get older, you realize, oh, I got to do a lot of stuff that a lot of kids didn't get to do. Mm-hmm. And it's probably because of that. So when you just are around that, and in a lot of ways it was positive, but it's still like there that you're different, you know, you start to think about life after death. So I really, and I don't know if this is what got me interested in studying people who had died and come back and really digging into the scriptures about what heaven is like, what hell is like anything that's regarding the afterlife. When in my early 20s, I got really into it and I was really reading a lot about it. And I don't know if it was because of CF or just because that's my personality, but I ended up doing a TV show, a couple pilots actually, for a TV show about people who died and came back to life. And it's just super, super interesting stuff. And it's ultimately, in a way, the most important thing you could think about because it's going to last a lot longer than whatever's here.
Brad, your situation is a little bit different, but do you think about death?
Oh, yeah, I would say almost daily. I feel like because I've had those heart attacks and stuff like that, every time...
You've had how many heart attacks?
Three. And
how old were you?
First one, I was 27. And my last one, I would have been 38, 39, something like that.
So within the last 3 years?
Yeah, I was 2020.
So 4 years.
4 years, yeah. So, yeah, every time I do anything strenuous or anything like that, any like, you know how like you'll get those random muscle pains in your chest, you know, it's just like a twitch or a twinge. Every one of those, it all reminds me. I know it's not the same thing, but it reminds me of the heart attacks that I had. And I feel like to me, I already know what's going to get me. Like, I feel like that's probably what's going to be what gets me. But like Ryan was saying, the thing that I was blessed with is I became a Christian in 2001. This is well before I ever had any of these heart attacks. And when I had those heart attacks,
like the year you graduated high school.
Yeah, it was the year after I graduated, or the summer after I graduated. But because I've had that strong faith, death wasn't scary for me. And so I think about it, but I think about it in the terms of like, how can I make sure that everybody that I will be leaving behind is taken care of, that I didn't leave them in a lurch? How can I make sure that, you know, people are good? Can I look forward to this? Yes, this is something that I can look forward to. It's not going to be scary. It's going to be entering into heaven. That's going to be great. So it's there, but because I think about it so much, because I have such confidence through my faith, it's not like a big scary thing. Now, I know, like, if you start thinking about planning for it, that's kind of, it can have that, like, I don't know, kind of macabre or morbid feeling to it. You go in, you sit down, you talk, and you're doing that. But it's so important to make sure that you take care of the people that are around you. So that's kind of where I'm at on it. I do think about it, I would say, almost daily.
I don't know if I think about dying daily. I don't have a condition, or I've not had heart attacks. My brushes with death have a lot more to do with, like, incidents. I was in a rollover car accident in 1997, headed up Highway 55 to Chicago from the Metro East here. And we rolled our vehicle. The truckers that pulled over to help us said we rolled 6 to 8 times going 65 miles an hour up the highway. And my whole family was in the car. We were all wearing our seatbelts. God saved us that day. No doubt in my mind. I have a very, very high level of stress riding in a vehicle, and will for the rest of time. Like, there are times where, all the memes about women sitting in the front passenger seat about, while they're side-seat driving, I am that times all the numbers. It's not good. My husband understands it, but I don't think it's good. It's not good of me, but there are times where I will literally say to him, Jared, you're not doing anything wrong. I trust that you're in control. I need you to, if you would be so kind as to, like, pull back, especially if there's a crazy driver or something out there. Like, will you just give extra space? I said, and I will tell him, like, my anxiety is, like, through the roof right now. It's not because I don't trust you. This is just the way it is. And he does that for me because he loves me and he's, like, the best. But I was in that really bad car accident. Ended up, we were in a, I don't remember the year specifically. I think it was, like, a 93 or a 95 Ford Aerostar. I know it was a Ford Aerostar, like those boxes on wheels. But we ended up upside down in the median, had to crawl out. I remember that very vividly. I remember the sound of it. I remember the feel of it. I remember seeing the headlights on the highway. And that's something that is very much impressed on me. And I experienced that. I just know what's possible. It's when you're in a car and you experience something like that, you now know that that's in the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Like, all of these crazy things could happen to you. People die in all sorts of crazy ways all the time. But when you have a personal experience with it, if you're somebody who's in a hospital room for a lot, or if you are constantly seeing doctors or getting, you know, we know Brad has to go get his heart checked on all the time. Like, you become familiar with that. You're just more aware of the reality of that situation. A different time, I was driving to Florida. We were going on spring break to Jupiter, Florida for spring training. And there was a probably 50 yards, 75 yards of median that existed, huge space in Tennessee. We were driving at like 3 a.m. at night, and I was driving in the left lane, headed south, and a car came from the other side of the median, drove all the way through that median into my lane, and just barely missed T-boning us from the other side. I assume that the person fell asleep. Maybe they had a heart attack, maybe something, I don't know. It was like the person who was driving was no longer driving and it was out of control. I don't know how that car missed us, but I mean, the people in the car for the most part were sleeping. I screamed really loud, and like after that I was just, the adrenaline release after that probably took me all the way into Florida. So you just know that these things happen to people in vehicles. And I saw a car on the Poplar Street Bridge today that was on its side, up against the side of the Poplar Street Bridge.
Wow. And that may have been what the traffic we were dealing with.
Yes. Okay. And I saw that, and I just, like, I pray that whoever was involved in that, I pray that they are okay. Because the close call of being in, like, the vehicle being on the side of in the middle of the bridge. It's just weird to think about, you know, we're talking with Todd Sivia in the 1 o'clock hour about planning for the future. We regularly plan for dying of old age, you know, next to your loved ones, and you just you get to work out all the decades of your life, and then it's time, and it's peaceful and whatever. I think about my grandma who died when she was 95, and like, wow, just you're living your full life, and then one day you go home to your creator, which is what she did. But everybody has different life experiences. Everybody has different fears. And these are like really, really big things that you probably are thinking on. Brad says he thinks about it every day. How often would you say, you said you don't as much these days?
Every couple days, maybe. Think about death.
I just think about the repercussions for the people who are left behind. Mm-hmm. And my kids, mostly.
It's funny, the older you get, the more you realize in any situation, the things that could go wrong, though.
That's all I think about, really. I mean, maybe not to the extent of death all the time, but
right.
I'm just constantly preparing plan B, C, D, E, and F, because A is obviously not going to work out.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, for the election, this is a weird tie-in, but I think it's incredibly consequential for the future of this country, but also specifically for me, for my husband, and for my family, that Donald Trump win the election. I really, truly believe that. It's not just, like, go red team. It's so much bigger than that.
Yeah.
It's so much more important than that. And I'm so used to planning plan B, C, D, E, and F, that if plan A works and Donald Trump gets elected, it's going to take me some time to get comfortable in that reality. Which is kind of weird, because it's what I want the most. But I'm the most convinced that's not what's going to happen.
You know, what's crazy is that all the economic policy that we talk about, it's all true, but the immediate thing that I say, man, if Democrats get power back, in 2021, they had an opportunity to take as much power as they could, as much freedom as they could from people, and they took every opportunity that they had. They didn't restrain themselves mm-hmm. at all. The only thing that restrained them was the Supreme Court, and that was eventually. That stuff's real now in the United States. And it wasn't before. It was theoretical. It was, they could do this. Now we've seen them actually take everything that they can get with one crisis. And that's what scares me.
The upside for a Trump presidency is huge. Like, it's a huge positive shift if Donald Trump is to be elected. But the converse is true as well. It's not like it's a, oh, well, we'll just keep doing more of the same here and we'll be able to make it through. I mean, I do believe we'll be able to make it through as much as God intends us all to make it through anything at any given time. I'm a little humbled by how much God talks about how great suffering is for us. I'm a little like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah, right.
It's been good.
It's okay.
Yeah, I totally believe you.
Yeah.
Totally got my full trust. Got it. Suffering. Manageable. Point made. Donald Trump?
But God, the human condition is suffering, right?
Yeah.
So we're all suffering all the time, really.
And you know that there are people listening to us right now who feel exactly the same way, completely reversed. That if Donald Trump is to win, they have great... I'm not going to be specific, but there are people I've talked to in this building, and they're the sweetest, most dear people who are going to be very, very, very emotionally affected if Donald Trump wins the election. And I want to say to those people, like, you don't need to be. Like, it'll be fine. It'll be good for you. But they want to say the same thing to me mm-hmm. if Harris wins. We have the exact same sentiments and emotions, and we just see it completely differently. And we care about each other as people. And, you know, like, I've asked this person about their opinions on Kamala Harris, and this person really likes Kamala Harris. And I asked this person why they like Kamala Harris, and then they told me about how much they dislike Donald Trump. And that's enough for them. Like, I know that we hear that and we're like, but why Harris? It is enough for people voting for Kamala Harris that he's not Trump, that she's not Trump. That's enough for them. They don't feel the need to justify it any further. Like, that's the price of admission for a vote for Kamala Harris. There are just all of these hugely emotional things. I mean, there are people who are in an enormous amount of stress and anxiety over this election right now who are not going to live to see the results of it. So, like, priorities, I think. Let's take a quick break. We come back, more Annie Fry Show right after this. Don't go away.
my shoes, my chicken.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, it's October. And the election is really... Are you scared of it? I'm scared of the election. I'm just going to be honest. The election... It's scary to me because it's going to be final soon.
The finality of it is a little scary, but I'm looking forward to being over with it.
How do you feel about it, Ethan? The election is 14 days away. 2 weeks from today, election night, by the way, we'll be broadcasting live on our YouTube channel, so come subscribe.
I honestly don't think that we had that live chat poll a couple of weeks ago about how are we feeling about it, and it was like excited, nervous, anxious. I feel like I'm not going to be really nervous until that day. Feel like once we get to that day, it's really going to start ramping up. Like, okay, it's here. This is the day.
Everybody walks around and you just see people and you make your eyes real wide and you kind of smile awkwardly. Yeah. And you're like, ee!
You start getting the coverage and you start hearing stuff and then you start getting hope and you're not sure if it's false hope. And I feel like until we get pretty close to it, I'm going to be able to keep it all together.
Brad, are you nervous about it? Scared?
Yeah, I'm nervous. Like, the way I describe it is like how you feel when your team's in postseason baseball or hockey or whatever.
Stakes are high.
Yes, the stakes are high. You know your team's there for a reason. So I know my guy's there for a reason.
Yeah,
I know he's got. I know he's got a shot. But
it's
at the
like
same time,
the Phillies were supposed to be in, and the Mets were like, "How about us instead?" Phillies sit down, and then the Mets just stepped in there and swiped. No, that's what Kamala did to Joe.
Yeah. How about us instead?
I'm really nervous about it and excited about it. But my willingness to be excited about it makes me nervous. So there we are. It's also Halloween. How much Halloween, like how big on Halloween are you guys?
I enjoy the lead up to Halloween because Halloween itself is fun. I like trick-or-treating with the kids and stuff. Like the old stuff, the old-timey stuff about Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I like that stuff.
Brad?
Yeah, I'm on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably a 6.
Ethan?
I also enjoy it. I enjoy the build up to it. I think that it's fun, like on the weekends, and you're kind of scrolling through the channels and you see like the scary movies on. I think that's kind of fun. And then my wife's really big on the fall scented candles.
Yeah.
But like that also, so was my mom. So like that's a little bit of nostalgia. So you're like,
sure.
Yeah, this just kind of feels right.
I think the thing I like the most about Halloween is the season. I like the transition into fall. I like all of the things that come with fall, and Halloween is the way you kind of kick it off. Because once Halloween is over, boom, Thanksgiving, Christmas, then the dead of winter.
Wait, so you're kicking off fall with Halloween?
Yeah.
That seems a little bit early.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the Halloween season?
You said that like that was wrong.
No. I thought you were saying that like fall begins at Halloween for you.
No, I celebrate, like the Halloween vibe being out there in the world.
Okay.
The
right.
lead up.
I misunderstood.
September, probably.
There are two, well, it means there are three things that make fall official for me. The first, cool weather. Halloween stuff everywhere and football.
Thank you. Okay. Yes. I was just waiting
football.
For that one.
Yes. Right. We're a football house, college football, Notre Dame, Fighting Irish, not Catholic. just they were on NBC when my husband was growing up, and that's why he likes them. Here are 17 scary movies that made people scream bloody murder and that they wished they hadn't seen. So I am not really a scary movie person. I used to pretend to be probably a little bit more when I was younger and people around me were, and I wasn't going to be like, I'm going to go home and watch, you know, something cheap and easy and soft. Anybody in here big on scary movies?
No, I wouldn't say big.
Ish. I wouldn't say like it's like a crazy addiction, but I think that the ones that are like loosely based off of true stories, like the Conjuring series and stuff like that, is kind of interesting.
Okay, the first one, I want to know if you guys have seen these. This is a BuzzFeed article, so just bear with me here. The Blair Witch Project. Did you guys ever watch it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when it was out, I did.
I never saw it.
I remember when that came out.
Here's the thing. That movie was built up so big
at the time
that by the time I actually went and saw it, I was like, oh.
A little underwhelming.
It says, no special effects, just great acting, terrifying noises, and psychological terror. The last scene was terrifying. The original found footage movie that spawned so many others. I don't even know what the story is. I know the, like, the structure that is in the woods.
Yeah, it's people in the woods. There's a witch out there somewhere.
Yeah, it's a group of college amateur filmmakers that are going to, for their class project, go out to the woods and make a movie about the Blair Witch.
But the whole thing is it's just a story that someone's. I know it was supposed to be made to be look like it was a documentary, but it's just all baloney sausage.
Yeah, all fake. It's written. Sorry. It was the big explosion of quote found footage movies.
Darkness Falls. Anybody seen that? I've never even heard of it.
Don't know what it is.
I don't know either.
The Hills Have Eyes.
I've seen that.
Oh.
I remember watching that. I think it says it came out in 2006. My husband and I got married in 2007, so this might have been the time where we would have dipped in to that. I believe we watched this and maybe watched The Lion King after it.
I need something lighthearted.
It was a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
Is that the one where most of the movie, or at least some of it, takes place in one of those fake atomic towns out west?
My best friend and ex-husband had to watch the scene, tell me what happened, and then we'd watch it. I'm still mad at them for making me watch it. It was so disgusting and terrifying. I just people reacting to it. But yes, I think so. And I remember, to me, it's like the things that they interject that are super disturbing, like contorted in a way that I never would have come up with. And when I'm seeing it, I look like I shouldn't be seeing. You know, I understand, like, Jason, is that Jason? Is that Michael? That's Michael, isn't
that's
it?
That's Psycho.
Yeah, that's Psycho.
Oh, good Lord.
it is a knife, though.
Well, Psycho, too. Like, I mean, these are suspenseful movies, crazy people who want to kill people. Okay, that's fine. But some of these other thrillers just take it so much further than I could possibly ever imagine. The next one is Seven.
Yeah, Seven's good.
Is it scary?
I don't know if it's scary so much as it is psychological thriller.
Is that the one with Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What's in the box?
Personally, I hated Seven. That movie haunted me for years, especially the lust scene. It was just twisted enough that I could see some religious.
I don't remember all that.
I don't either. Plus, I hated thinking of the person who sat down and thought up of all the details of torture and death and what else was swirling in their mind. So, but Morgan Freeman in that? Brad Pitt?
Yeah, they're hunting down the killer.
Is the serial killer killing people via the seven deadly sins?
Yep, exactly. And they're right behind him, so they keep finding him right after he's done one more.
Oh, that's usually the way those serial killer shows go.
I like to see one where they're just way off the trail for the whole movie.
And at the end, they die.
And at the end, he got away.
They coincidentally run into him. Oh, there he is!
That's that one does!
I want to see one where they catch him at the beginning, and then they're just writing traffic tickets the rest of the movie.
We had zero leads.
Number five, The Road. You familiar with that?
Yeah, 2009? The Road is based on a, what's it, Coric, I can't remember the author's name. The book's good. The movie's okay.
It says, I read the book just to see what people were talking about, and it's so dark that my brain has repressed most of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very dark kind of like, the whole thing just makes you feel depressed, but it's very good.
Post-apocalyptic?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The Witch?
Isn't that part of the Conjuring stuff?
Might be. I don't know.
No. I've not seen that one.
Here's an interesting one. Number seven, The Fly.
Oh, The Fly's cool.
I remember seeing that. What was the lead actor? Oh, that was
Jeff Goldblum.
That's Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, that's right. Until he redeemed himself in my mind in Independence Day, Jeff Goldblum made me very uncomfortable.
I mean, Jeff Goldblum's MO is to make you uncomfortable.
I know, but at least he saved the world when he was doing it in Independence Day.
He played a nerd a little bit more in that movie.
The Fly?
Well, yes, like, that too, but...
But I mean, like, the way he morphs and stuff, I don't even really remember. Doesn't he get into, like, some sort of science-y, like...
Yeah, it's a chamber.
...thing, and then he...
Teleportation
A fly
chamber.
Got in there, and then he turns into a fly.
He kind of, yeah, he becomes a fly.
There could have been scarier insects.
There could have been.
Could have been the spider.
But that was late 70s, and it was an independent movie, and the makeup and the way that they made him a fly was so gross.
It made me very uncomfortable.
It was just gross.
Number 8, the original 13 Ghosts, 1960. Familiar with that?
I didn't see that one.
No.
Slightly before my time. Slightly.
I think I saw the remake, though.
The original 13 Ghosts?
Mm-hmm.
I've never even heard of that.
Number 9, 1963, The Birds.
Oh, yeah, The Birds is great. That's Hitchcock.
I've never seen that.
Me neither.
You should watch that one. It's, I mean, Alfred Hitchcock movies are just good.
Yeah.
They're just good movies.
Number 10, Silent Hill, 2006.
Also a good horror movie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
These are all like before my time, though, a little
well,
bit.
Well, Ethan, I got
That's
news for you.
That's the problem here.
Right? There's a lot of stuff. I was six.
Event Horizon, 1997.
Ooh, I saw that one.
Yeah, that's yeah, sci-fi
that
horror.
That one's terrifying. That one is basically they go to find this ship that had disappeared, and they had invented this warp drive, and then
like ship is in space or
spaceship. Yeah, they find it. It's like it, we thought it was lost forever, and they went back, and basically the ship had found a portal through hell and came back with some of that left in it.
Ooh,
and they're going through. It's terrifying.
Phantasm.
No, it sounds
Phantasm.
Like there's ghosts though.
The only in movie the that had me looking under my bed. It looks like it's an older one.
Don't know that one.
The Poughkeepsie Tapes?
Never heard of it.
Mm-mm.
Last House on the Left?
I've heard of that one. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You haven't seen any of these? Really?
Mm-mm. I don't... Not, maybe part of The Hills Have Eyes, and I was like, I'm out.
Yeah, that movie was kind of creepy.
Saw. I've never seen a Saw.
Saw.
Have not seen
Here's the
Saw.
Thing about Saw. People love the Saw series, and if you're into the just... Texas Chainsaw mm-hmm. Massacre torture type of horror, that's for you. But Saw 1
was good.
Is a really psychological movie, and it's based in basically one room. I always talk about this. I love movies that can pull off being in a room, because that means your writing is really good, because you got nothing else to go on.
What I remember people saying about Saw when it came out is that it was like a next level participation in blood, guts, and gore.
The sequels all are. I mean, the original does too, because the threat is this is what you're going to have to do to get out of this situation. But it's based on that threat. That's what's good about it. Is it not, it's not just blood everywhere all the time.
I don't need that in my life.
I do recommend the original.
Number 2 left. 16, As Above, So Below, 2014.
I don't know that one.
Red thumbnail for the video with an upside down... Eiffel Tower?
Oh.
That one. Got it.
Yeah.
The last one.
I didn't know what was going on. It was all in French.
I found this one to be interesting. The last one they had was Jaws. Said, legit has caused a lifelong fear of the ocean for me. I will not go further than my waist. And usually, I got news for you. You can still get bit by a shark in water up to your waist.
I just did the Universal Studio tour. And I saw none other than Jaws. Jaws himself.
Was it scary? Did he say hi?
Not really. They're redoing that part of the tour, and so Jaws is just sitting out of water.
Like a fish out of water. Jaws yeah. was scary, though. It's very suspenseful.
Yeah.
And the name in the game of suspenseful music is dun dun.
Oh, yeah.
You
Absolutely.
Can put that behind anything and potentially make it suspenseful. I would like you to test that theory.
Okay.
A new series on the Andy Fry YouTube channel, Shorts.
Ryan walks up to Brad.
Yeah, I would like to see that happen. All right. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll get the results to today's YouTube live chat poll with Ethan. Will you trust the results of the election, yes or no? Let us know what you think. We'll be right back. You can do, but don't buy. What they're selling couldn't be further from the truth. What if I were the one to tell you that the fight's already
Trump goes out and he says, I'm going to use the military to arrest my political enemies. Then the Mike Johnsons and the Lindsey Grahams and the Wall Street Journal, they said, oh, no, that's not what he really meant. Then he comes back and he says, yeah, that's exactly what I really meant. And you know what's going to happen? You correctly pointed it out. If he wins, he's going to say, I told people I was going to do this. I have the legitimacy of an election behind me. And you know what? He will have a point. Because if I do 5 interviews a day and answer 20 questions, 18 of them are going to be about polling. We've become a nation of polling analysts. And my point is, it's 48-48. He says, I'm going to get rid of the Constitution. I don't think we should get rid of the Constitution. Why don't you just go out and report what he's saying that he's going to do? And they keep saying he doesn't mean that. And he keeps saying, no, I mean that. I'm saying what I mean.
I don't think James Carville is okay. And the more he doesn't want us to talk about polls, the better I feel about him.
Yeah, that's true.
The YouTube live chat poll for today is, will you trust the results of the election? You've got like 90 seconds tops to get your vote in, but it is so close right now. So close. So get your vote in. You might be able to swing the results of this election. I should have asked, will you trust the results of this poll? Just as a basic thought. Brad, your thoughts on this poll question?
Man, this is going to sound terrible, but I'm a no. I don't think after 2020 I'll ever fully completely trust an election again. They manipulated those rules leading up to that election so much that what are we going to do? And then I can't get the picture of those people covering the windows at the vote counting station. I think it might have been Detroit or something like that, but they put poster board over the windows.
Like, what are you hiding?
Why? That's my question. Why? Give me a legitimate reason for that. So now I'm probably never going to trust them fully again.
Ryan?
I think it's funny that when you say people are concerned about cheating, that people automatically assume that that's Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Well,
it's very interesting. I'm a no simply because I don't really trust anything, and I'm always going to question everything. So I will question this regardless.
There's that like maybe North Carolina Republican that got in trouble for voter fraud or whatever, which is funny that a Republican did it, and it's like the most frustrating thing for Democrats to admit that cheating does happen, but only one time ever, and it was one Republican in North Carolina.
That one guy in North Carolina.
All right, Ethan, some more votes are coming in right now, but the results to today's poll?
292 votes as I click end poll here. 52% saying no, 48% say yes to will you trust the results of the election.
Man, 52-48. That's about right, isn't it?
Right down the middle.
And the interesting thing there is our audience definitely is leaning to the right. This is not a 50-50 audience of the left and the right voting here. Pretty crazy. Ethan, thank you. You guys will be back tomorrow with more Any Fry Show. We are 14 days from the election. Missouri, go vote today. You can. Vote early. Mark Reardon next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.